I'm John Batchelor, Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defensive Democracy, with me. Syria. We welcome Ahmad Sharari of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, watching a particular part of Syria, the coast and an airport nearby. Why? Because during the Syrian civil war, the depths of it, Russia was much involved in acting out the aggression of the Assad regime. Russia got an exchange and of a seaport and an airfield and something of a protection shield around it so that it didn't have to deal with all of the gangsters and terrorists moving in and out of Syrian territory. However, there is now a new boss in town, al-Shara, in the Damascus government, and there's this headline from Reuters in these last days. Syria and Russia reach deal on future of a seaport and an airfield bases after 18 months of talk. Lead headline. Syria and Russia reached a memorandum of understanding. 18 months of intensive negotiations. The ministry said the Syrian state would take over management of civilian facilities, including the airport and the commercial berth at the port, allowing them to be gradually integrated into the country's civilian administration. That's the part I didn't understand. Ahmed, a very good evening to you. Russia is staying in Syria. Is that correct? And Syria is permitting this. Is that correct? What does it mean, integration? What is that pointing to? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Russia maintained these two bases in the Syrian coast, and they had agreed with Bashar al-Assad when he was in power that they would keep a foothold, they leased one of the bases for 50 years and the other for, I think, longer than that. And so there was the question, with the fall of the Assad regime, whether these bases will remain. And it seems to be, and Shah has signaled multiple times that he's negotiating with Moscow on the future of these bases, which Russia really needs for, first of all, for its operations in the Eastern Mediterranean, but also some of its work in Africa. And so they've been holding intense negotiations that I think involve more than or go beyond the military angle. Syria still depends on Russian oil and Russian grain, so they might be getting those at a discount in order to preserve these bases. But what we know for sure is that Russia is not leaving this new arrangement, this new MOU, and the draft language has not been released. Does not showcase that Russia is leaving Syria, but it's transforming its base to become a joint training facility where the Russians will train Syrian officers and soldiers, mainly because the military doctrine in Syria is Russian or Soviet, as well as the weapons.
A detail. Are there warships at the port? Will they remain? Are there warplanes at the airport? Will they remain?
That's still not, again, because the language of the MOU has not been publicized. There are no there's no way of knowing if the military infrastructure will be removed. And I think that was done intentionally, not signaling or not explicitly saying if Russia will maintain its ships and its planes in these bases. But again, what I know for sure is that Russia wants to maintain its foothold so it can support its operations elsewhere. And that would mean maintaining some of that infrastructure. But after the fall of the regime, a lot of the warships and the fighter jets have been removed, but not all of them.
Bill, you have a question.
Hello, Ahmed. President Trump invested a lot of political capital in meeting with the self-appointed president of Syria, who was a specially designated global terrorist for leading al-Qaeda's branch in the country. Did he make a mistake here? What has his support for Ahmed al-Shara actually gotten the United States if it's allowing the Syrian government to cozy up with Russia?
It's an important question to ask and one that I ask myself occasionally. And to be fair, I don't think President Trump is against the idea of a relationship between Damascus and Russia. If we look at the past 6 months and we've seen Sharam go to Moscow twice in the past year, the U.S. hasn't put conditions on Syria for sanctions relief in exchange for letting go of Russia or stopping its dependency on Russia. And I think the Syrians have managed to convince the U.S. or this administration that it needs a strong relationship with Russia when it comes to energy needs as well as grain. And the U.S. seems okay with that. But I mean, the broader question here is what has Syria given to the U.S. In exchange for all this? And to be fair, what the U.S. is getting is nothing. I mean, we say that there's stability in Syria and that this man has managed to unify all these factions and that Syria is now, there's great progress in Syria. But in reality, it's far from the truth. You still have factions, operating or roaming around. You still have ISIS, attacking, areas or civilians in Damascus. You still have an armed force that is composed, or you still have foreign jihadists within the army. And we just removed the most significant sanctions regime on Syria, not the most significant, but the last, as they'd like to say, the last obstacle, which was the state sponsor of terror. So in about a month, the U.S. will have zero leverage on Syria. But at the same time, there's zero progress when it comes to the U.S. counterterrorism strategy in the Middle East and the strategic interests that the U.S. has in the Middle East.
I'm most interested if this has any connection to the recently announced defense pact between Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Turkey, Turkey being the principal player here. Does Turkey gain or lose in this agreement with Russia? Is Russia seen as an ally or an adversary?
I think when it comes to Syria, the Turks have given Damascus the green light to maintain that relationship with Russia, mainly because Turkey can't provide Syria with the weapons that they need and with the doctrine that the Syrian army needs. Again, because of the historic relationship between Moscow and Damascus, that relationship had, or the Syrians argue that relationship has to be maintained. And I don't think Turkey sees that as a threat, because it also has its own interest. I mean, the way to look at it is the Syrians are playing all sides. They're playing the US, they're playing the Russians, they're playing the Ukrainians, and they're playing the Turks, to get maximum benefit. And for now, until now, the strategy is working.
Bill, you have a question. We have about a minute.
Yeah, as you note, the strategy is working for Syria, but for the United States, is this strategy working? Is the U.S. getting anything in return from its close relationship with Saudi?
I mean, it depends on what we want to qualify as a return to this investment. Is Syria preventing ISIS attacks? No, they're not. Are they preventing weapons from reaching Hezbollah? Yes, they are to an extent, but some weapons are flowing. Is Syria still sponsoring international terrorism? Maybe not, but it has factions that are still designated by both the UN and the United States within its armed forces. So it's, and the broader term of stability and Middle East stability and betting on that, or betting on Syria to become the beacon of stability, again, it's unrealistic at the moment. So for now, I mean, I can't say that the U.S. is getting anything from this very close relationship.
Ahmad Sharari, Bill Raggio, Foundation for Defense of Democracy. I'm John Batchelor.